I welcome you all back once again. Happy Tuesday. And once again, our adventures in Saltmarsh continue. We are entering our, fourth episode of the extended adventures of our party, moving through the various guts and underbellies of the Tower of Xenopus, still in pursuit of the name of the Siren, whose music still gives Saltmarsh its siren call to all of the various fish and things that make the town bountiful. The word of an ancient treant and the detective skills of our resident fairy genie warlock and the tenacity of the men of the Viridian Knight. Lots of different things have converged to bring you all to this point. When we left off last time, we had seen the party make their way through a good portion so far of the dungeons beneath the Tower of Xenopus, encountering goblins and the skeletons of minotaurs within perhaps not a labyrinth, but certainly a kind of twisty-turny, cavernous underbelly. A sea cave has been at least accessed, if not thoroughly explored. The headquarters of a band of pirates located and, I would say, decimated as a young woman from the town was rescued, and the two DM PCs have gone their way. Now our party picks up with a very important moment unfolding before them. When last we were all together, the BF3, well, at this point, numbering 5, the BF3 have converged in a hallway within the Tower of Xenopus, and with little to nothing suggesting occupation or decoration or anything like that, two doors in the center of this hallway caught your attention. The one that was magically at least enchanted, locked and enchanted, seemed to have behind its face some pretty extensive magical items, or at least magical signatures that Adrian was able to pick up. The other, nothing of note that you could detect. And when we left off last time, Fable, the faithful familiar to Echo, had just been ported into this space. And dark as it is, we pick up tonight with Fable looking around the room. And what he sees is, I said last time, pretty impressive. This week, I want to bring it a little bit closer. Fable finds himself in a room that is about 30 feet across by 30 feet front to back. Not a vast space, but spacious. And within its walls, you see quite a few tomes and tools, many different, some very obviously ancient and arcane, others a little bit more practical looking, maybe even handmade, perhaps. You see what appears to, at least Fable's kind of first glance, to be something like a study, a room that has a nice tall chair near a pretty big work table. He's able to see on a peg off to the side what looks like a fairly ornate set of robes. There is as well, scattered across the kind of big work table in here, a variety of notes written in a variety of different languages, all in the same hand, but with different scripts and different styles. There are a couple of items in here that seem to almost radiate a soft, magical kind of presence that I think even Fable would be able to pick up on pretty well. It is not a treasure room. It's not full to bursting with, you know, riches and grandeur, but it is definitely a space that was reserved and locked for good reason. You look around and you can see a lot of things that seem to have taken a lot of time and effort to craft and prepare. And although Fable reads, Infernal, Common, I would imagine. Does he have any other languages that he recognizes just off the top?
I think your familiar knows any language that you know. I think so. I'm not really sure, but I know the imp, I think it just gets Infernal and Common.
Okay. He does see a couple of things written in Common, but not many. Most of them seem to be notes, handwritten, and with little blurbs of things about, restock, bat membranes or cat's whiskers. It looks like mostly the kinds of things that would need to be remembered when doing business with the purveyors of things like that. At least that's what the various notes that are written in Common seem to kind of have a common theme with. The few things that you see written in Infernal are mostly things that deal with notes about the planes that are considered the outer planes, the lower planes. Just some cursory things here and there. You find that there is a sort of organization to the things. Like they're put in an arrangement that is not hither and thither. It's not scattered. It is a little bit chaotic, and yet it seems to be a kind of ordered chaos, as though there were a measure of like fixation on making sure things are exactly where they need to be, even if there's not a label for every single thing. So you find sets of notes that all have the same either basic premise or seem to address similar topics. Sometimes there are notes that are all stacked up with the same language. Excuse me. Others seem to all be about one particular thing. But without opening things and rifling through things, Fable is able to only glean that this is a room where, study and craft were carried out by a very, very powerful.
As Echo is watching through Fable's eyes, she is going to direct him to look around for wherever the most primary work table or desk is at, and see if there are any personal type effects, silent images, carvings, things of that nature that might be left sitting on it.
Okay. I'll say he's looking for personal effects. Go ahead and give me an investigation check. And for Fable, that means he's going to need... Wrong clicker.
Is it for Fable's investigation or...
That's right. You're looking through his eyes right now, aren't you? You can use Echo stats. Yeah, that's fine.
All right. And can Fable aid her? Or is this a one or the other sort of thing?
I think it's one or the other here, since you're really looking through his eyes, using him as a puppet.
Well, I rolled a natural 2, so...
Ooh, oh, rough.
It came out to a 7.
Okay, so as you're casting your eyes around, it's almost as though Fable is looking in certain spaces, but your intent moving through him seems to be actually working against his better judgment. There are quite a few things in this space that have, like I said, the stamp of almost a personal effect about them, but you're having a hard time really piecing anything together. I'll say this, even with a 7, there is, there is, in a place of prominence, I don't think it would be tacked up, but it would be, I don't know how old the technology for framing things is per se, but the idea of preserving a piece of paper with a charcoal portrait. It is affixed to the wall, and this portrait is of a... Again, it's just right there where anybody could see it. It's a very lovely female figure. And although it's done in charcoal or some other kind of like very dark, monochromatic kind of thing, it is not unskilled, and the representation is sufficient that you're kind of struck by the beauty of this face. There's a soft smile, parted lips, and again, it's a, you know, charcoal drawing, but there's an expression. There's a glitter in the eyes that is enchanting. Does not affix you with magic or anything like that, but you see this face and you immediately are like, oh, well, that's a lovely face. Long hair, very wavy, and yeah, it's mostly just a shoulders and up headshot kind of sketch. And in the bottom left-hand corner, you see the same symbol that you saw outside. The letter that Adrian identified as an M in... It's comparable to, it's not exactly the same as the common tongue, but yes, the M script from the Aquan tongue. And you can see as well that M is very large, but there's more just to the side there. And although it's faint, extremely faint, you can just make out... Oh, where did I write it down? Gotta make sure I can see it right. Where'd it go? Everyone's anticipating. Walking on pins and needles. Ah! You see a name. It is written in Aquan. And so for you, looking at it, Echo, you can't tell what it says. But there is more written beside that first symbol. And you can recognize that it is there.
And then Echo, even as she's looking through Fable's eyes, but she's still with the party on the other side, sensory-wise, unaware of that area. But she will speak out to them and say, I think she's here. I think that's her.
And Adrian is actually going to point to the other side of the door, realizing that Echo cannot hear him. He is actually going to cast message on Fable. and we'll say, who? The person we're looking for.
To which then Fable would respond and clarify, it is an image, but probably of the one.
Okay. I might be able to get us inside. I want to check the door first, though, just in case. Just in case there's something there that we are unaware of. And Adrian is actually going to look at the door, and you'll watch as he flickers on his Eldritch Sight. And he's going to look at the door, study it a bit, and he's actually going to turn to Arcane Ravens. I understand the natures of magic, but I'm curious. What are your thoughts on this? And he is actually going to hold out his hand, and you watch as he takes both hands and seems to press it into the nothingness in front of him. And he pulls his hands apart, and you watch as the air seems to shimmer and ripple, as it's almost like a doorway or a portal is opened. And you can see that the door begins to shimmer as he casts Silent Image to share with the rest of the group what he can see with his detected magic. And he's going to turn to Arcane Bree. and we'll say, I know you're also a practitioner of the arcane. I have a thought on what this might be, but I would like your feedback. And you watch as he takes his hand, gives Bria a few moments to see it, and then closes it again before he places his own hand against his chest and says, perhaps fate might be able to guide us in this. And mechanically, Adrian is asking Bree to aid him in the Arcana check to see if they can determine what the spell on the door is.
All that to say, would you aid me with this door? Sure. Arcane Raven, is Bree up for that task?
Oh, heck yeah.
All right. Very good. So, you are casting...
Detect Magic. Going to attempt the Arcana check to determine the type of spell that is on the door.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, and the ask for aid from Fate was Guidance.
Aid.
Which, fortunately, that's a natural 20 for a plus 5, 25, plus 2, 27.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. So you feel the arcane power flow through you. And it's such a fascinating feeling to have your own kind of highly ordered... was this a sorcerer spell or a warlock spell?
Invocation.
For you. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Very good. Then, yeah, you feel the magics of your fiendish patron intertwine with the weird kind of resonance of Bree's abilities, and it's almost like you get this little kind of sensation coming off of her own, like, tension between the studied magics of her bard college and the more chaotic wild magic that bounces around inside her. And all of that kind of synergy stirs together to give you this moment of, like, insight. You have this absolute epiphany, and looking at the door, the way that it is set up, I apologize. I know I've got this pulled up right over here. Where'd you go? What's the name of the spell?
It's right there. Arcane Lock.
Yeah, I believe that is the case. I typed in the wrong thing a minute ago. Arcane Mark.
No worries.
Arcane Lock. Arcane Lock. You identify it as the spell Arcane Lock.
Okay. And as Adrian focuses in on the spell and sees the warding magics strengthen the door and seem to almost shift the tumblers inside the lock itself at random, this will be a difficult door to open, and understandably so. We might have to use the knock spell for this one. And he's actually going to turn to Caden. We'll say, it's a ritual. Would you be willing to help me with this?
You think I can do something with magic?
And you watch as Caden smiles a bit. Says, I think you'll be helpful, one way or another. And he puts down his bag of holding, reaches inside, and you watch as he pulls out a metal rod. And as you look closely, you can actually see it is a crowbar. And on the side of the crowbar, in thin script, it actually has the word, single word, in common, the word spell written on it. And you watch as he takes Mage Hand, picks up the crowbar, and then jams it right on the latch. Looks, make sure that it's in place, nods, and then reaches again into his bag of holding. And you watch as he begins to pull, you watch as he hefts and grunts, as you watch as he pulls out a portable battering ram. And on the side of the battering ram is the word knock. And you watch as he
passes it over to Caden and says, would you be willing to aid with the Nox spell?
He looks down at the item, looks over at the door. Oh, I suppose I could break things.
Well, give me a minute. There's a bit more to the ritual. And he watches, he takes his hand, presses it against you, and says, may fate be with you. As he casts guidance. And then once again turns to Arcane Raven, Bree, and says, this will be something difficult. Would you be able to say a word of encouragement or inspiration for our friend as he attempts this, makes his first attempt at magic?
Yeah, give me a sec to think of something good.
So, as Rhi is thinking of that, for Caden, the crowbar, when you are using it to open an item, will give you advantage on a strength check. The portable battering ram will give you a static plus four to open an object. Guidance will give you a d4, and I'm not sure what level Bard Bree is. So we'll find out what her inspiration can give you. And for the GM, what Adrian is attempting to do with the crowbar right at the latch, he's essentially just asking Caden to hit the other side of the crowbar. And instead of prying open the door, he wants to just shove the crowbar and straight through the latch and just snap it into.
Okay. Now, if I understand how all this is going to be going down properly, we're setting it's a pretty high DC, considering the arcane lock is in place. Mm-hmm. And you're going for, you said, a strength check to do away with the locking mechanism entirely, rather than try to pick it or something like that.
Yes.
This is so flavorful. I'm super down. Sounds good. I've got the DC in mind, and it is not insignificant, but...
That's fair.
You guys are welcome to go ahead and give it a shot.
What's the wizard's name again?
Xenopus.
So Bree will go lay a hand on Caden and go, let's go knock, knock, knocking on Zamanda's door.
Fantastic.
I have an extra D6.
Beautiful. So Caden, advantage, a D6. So, advantage.
Make that an even 25.
Did you add the plus 4?
29.
And did you add the D4 and the D6?
Yes.
Okay.
So, it was a natural 18, plus 3 is 21, plus 1 on a D4, plus 4, plus 3 on the D6, 29.
Very good. So the text on the knock spell says that when you cast it, a loud knock audible from as far away as 300 feet on the target object. And since you have functionally replicated the knock spell with this act of great strength and prowess, I would say that 300 feet around you, and probably even further than that, considering the enclosed space and the echoing of these halls, each of you watch, and as Caden prepares to, like, swing, what do you use to hit this thing, by the way, to do?
Isn't he holding a portable battering ram?
Oh, you're right. Yes, I gotcha. So as you swing it around, you guys kind of realize at the last second it would be smart to, you cover your ears, and the quah of the thing smacking into the thing is like a thunder crack in the room. And my little kind of handy dandy reminder thing about DCs says that for very hard DCs, 25 is the threshold, something like swimming safely through rough water. Nearly impossible difficulty checks are at 30, like tracking a goblin in a sandstorm at night. So 29 gets you very well over the threshold of a second level spell. Physically, just ozone smell, like a zipping noise as the thundering of that battering ram crack begins to dissipate. You hear that magical seal is kind of broken, and there before you is a door with no real latch. Instead, there is an absence, just a nice hole kind of lead that you can look through and see into the room. And Caden, as you're kind of standing there close to it, if you lay a hand on the door, you find that it is extremely well balanced and is just ready to move inward. Actually, take that back. It would not swing inward, but it is very clearly no longer locked, because there's no lock to be locked. So good job, everyone's efforts.
Caden rolls his shoulders and pops some of the ligaments and hands back the battering ram. Yeah, that kind of felt good.
Adrian will laugh and say, "We'll make a wizard of you yet," as he grabs the crowbar, puts it back in his bag, and grabs the battering ram and puts it back in his bag.
Echo is not going to waste any time. She is going to zip through the hole in the door.
Okay. And I imagine right behind you, the door is going to open as the rest of the party starts to take a look inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody lighten the room up?
Do we... You know what? Why not?
I can. Yeah.
Currently, in this passageway, I don't remember which light source you guys had activated. Bree does not have dark vision, but this space, I don't remember if Echo had stopped glowing or not. I don't think so.
She had dropped the light spell at one point.
Okay. Then in this, you know, darkened space, as all this is going on, everyone with dark vision is able to, you know, to see in the grayscale. Bree, in the dark, you found Caden's shoulder and imparted your magic, and so some of the flow of the magic provided a little bit of a light show within this space. But yeah, now that the job is done and the sound has begun to die away, looking into this room, those of you with dark vision are able to make out in these, again, muted kind of tones. Stuff that Fable was able to see there, you can see in this space a pretty comfortable looking, well-appointed, not sleeping space, but instead there's one pretty impressive-looking chair. There is a workbench kind of... It's pretty uniquely constructed. It's like a combination, you know, almost like a roll-top desk, but there's also sort of off to the side a workstation of sorts. And there are some, along the walls, bookshelves that are not, you know, packed completely with tomes, but do have plenty of, it looks like, mostly uniformly bound, volumes. They do look like they are of varying ages, however. Some clearly show a little bit more wear and tear. Others look to be much more recent, although exactly how recent you can't quite say. As you look around in the space, you are clearly looking at a wizard's study and kind of primary, I would say, tinkering chamber. Like I said, over on the workbench kind of space, you see tools and very odd looking specific apparatus, or you can't quite tell at a glance what exactly, but you do see lots of little notes to self kind of pinned to spots or stuck onto things with some kind of adhesive that you don't see immediately. But yeah, it's a cluttered space, but not a not a messy space. So as you all make your way in here, what would you each like to do?
Do we see the painting?
Yes. You, again, although there's not a strong light source in here, you're able to see the contrast of the fairly light-colored, if you had to guess, probably something like a vellum. It doesn't look like, you know, paper in the more recent sense in Salt Marsh that you see day in and day out. It looks much older than that. The contrast is pretty, oh man, my adjectives are just failing tonight. It's beautiful. The strokes are strong. The form of it does not look like professional at all. It definitely still appears to be relatively amateur, but it is a very lovely likeness of a woman with flowing, wavy hair. You're able to see a little bit better here now that you're all taking the time to look closely, that there are like folds of skin along the jawline where it reaches the neck, that you assume probably something like gills that are not, you know, big and exposed. They're not as noticeable as like you'd see on a like a big fish or a shark or something. They're instead very subtle. Those lines, you can tell, have been done very carefully by the artist. The smile is very unique, and the expression overall is one of serenity, and to the point, I guess, before we get there. The name written in the corner, you're able to see now. I think you've recast Comprehend Languages when you were looking through the necromancy research room. Indeed. A bit ago. Okay. The time that has passed since then. I'm not going to make you recast Comprehend Languages just yet. You recognize that it is in the Aquan script. And the name that you see, it almost looks as though someone went to erase in that like faintness that lingers after a kind of cursory attempt to erase something that was written in pencil. You can see that it was written in charcoal initially. This has been blotted somewhat. The name that you read there is Melodie with an I-E at the end.
You watch as Adrian looks over at the painting, and he'll actually hold his hand out towards it. And you watch as four initially golden lights begin to flicker around it as he casts dancing lights. But then they shift from a golden down to a deep, almost cerulean blue. Almost like sunlight filtering through deep water as the lights frame the painting themselves. And you watch as he holds his other hand out towards it. You can almost hear the sound of waves, distant, rushing across the shore. And you watch as he turns his hand, and the letters of her name in Aquan seems to shift and flow as they seem to rearrange themselves as he casts Minor Illusion to rewrite her name in common. And they too carry this deep blue, almost flowing, watery script, as he ensures that everyone can both see and read her name for themselves.
That's her name? Melodie.
It is indeed. A beautiful name.
Echo just sits there, somewhat entranced by the fact that it seems like they've done it. They've found the name. This is what she had been asked to do, but also with questions as she speaks up and says,
"But why would anyone want to forget it? Why was she forgotten?"
"Possibly to hide the sins of the people of the town. To keep her memory from those who'd sullied it. Perhaps it brought pain, Sinopis, knowing what had happened to her, and it was something that he could not stop. Especially if he's as long-lived as the legends tell. For all we know, he could mourn her still." "But I do not think that we should leave this here. Leave a name to be forgotten. We've seen it and we will remember it. And we will ensure that others remember it as well." And you watch as Adrian once again shifts his hand again another 90 degrees, almost as if he's slowly turning it clockwise. And it's almost as if the painting itself rises off the wall and floats in front of them as he uses minor illusion to make a recreation of the painting with her name written in common. "We'll see. We'll take this with us. In our hearts. In our minds. And ensure that everything that she did for the people around here, giving them light and life, and food, and joy, a chance to live, will be recorded in the annals of history, one person at a time."
Just to clarify, did Adrian mm-hmm. take the actual picture, or just...
He did not. He just made an illusion of the picture and said that they will hold it in their minds, indicating that he intends to do this for other people, but will leave the actual, probably couple century old sheet of paper on the wall.
Okay. Looking around the room, there are... well, the things that I mentioned previously are in this space. What would you guys like to do?
Adrian, turning away from the painting, will once again close his eyes and reopen them as he has the familiar cat's eyes. And he would like to see which of the items around here seems to radiate the magic he'd seen before.
Sure. As you look around you, you can see very clearly that the robes hanging from the peg are very obviously magical in nature. You also see over towards the side of what looks like the desk, not the work table, but the desk. You can see a small pouch, I would say, with some like drawstrings towards the top. Situated next to a couple of books that are piled up. And you see, kind of hanging from a... Oh, excuse me. So wrapped around something lying over on the corner of the desk, you can see a brilliantly colored, multicolored piece of cloth. What's inside, you cannot tell. But the other thing that catches your attention is a set of slippers that appear to be situated near the foot of the chair.
He watches Adrian will hold out his hand. Take a deep breath in and breathe out. You watch as the multicolored mist escapes his lips as the misty visions or his invocation for a silent image causes each of these items to glow These things appear to be magical in this room. I say we take them and examine them outside of this area. Does anyone have any disagreements?
Yes, seems like a good idea.
All right.
Don't see that it makes a difference here or otherwise, but whatever.
Adrian will use Mage Hand to collect the individual items and then place them in the bag of holding.
Okay. Very good.
And he'll say...
See.
Go ahead. All
right, yep, go ahead.
I was going to say, Adrian will turn to Echo and everyone else and say, so anything else other than ensuring the world knows of this name that we need to do here before we return to the surface?
Echo is still... at this point, she stood up, but she's still over by the picture, and she's looking at it. And it would not be difficult to discern from her that she doesn't want to leave it here.
Okay. Are you wanting to investigate it further in some way, or just like wrestling with the desire to grab it?
How big is it?
Probably about the size of it's not like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, but probably kind of similar, about the size of a good paperback book page, maybe 4 by 7 or so.
Oh, it's a lot smaller than I thought. Well,
yeah,
that's
so it's
good.
Not like a poster. Like I said, it's a charcoal like sketch, like an etching there. But it was, like I said, kind of fairly prominently displayed. You suspect within very easy sight line of being seated in the chair.
Okay, then let me go back just a little bit. If it's that small, while Adrian was silent imaging, highlighting all of the magic items and everything, she would attempt to get Fable to help her to pick it up, and she wants to slip it into his bag of holding.
Okay. Give me... What kind of check would you like to make pull this off?
Whatever check it is, Bree would like to assist.
Okay, so you pick up on what Echo is up to and step over to lend a hand.
Probably the most important part of it would be stealth to try to get it slipped into the bag.
Okay, so you're trying to do this without alerting whatever spirits or personages or whatever might have an interest in it staying here.
Yeah, she's mostly just thinking about her own party, and it seemed like Adrian wanted to leave it here, but she really doesn't want to leave it here because she wants to give it to her patron.
I see. Okay.
And so she wants to bring it.
In that case, I'll say you can make a stealth check to pull this off without being seen. We'll see if what you do next happens stealthily or not.
All right, so with advantage, that is a 19.
Okay, with a 19, you and Fable, kind of start at the corners, and although you don't see anything physical tacking this thing to the wall, you find that as soon as your fingers sort of slip underneath the edges of the parchment or whatever it is, it does almost immediately give away, letting go of its hold from the wall, and falling off into your hand. With a 19, this all happens utterly soundlessly. So I'm going to say that it's one thing to get a hold of it in the first place without, you know, touching it or anything. Now, putting it away in some fashion, it's going to require like physically handling it and doing so very carefully. So give me a sleight of hand check, and I'll say go ahead and do that with advantage as well, since you've got an invisible set of dainty little hands giving you assistance with this. Or it can be a straight dexterity check if you prefer.
They would be the same. So that is an 11.
Okay. With the 11, you take the parchment down. You can see now that there is writing on the back of this parchment. You cannot read it, but you can see that it is there. And say with an 11, the paper starts to, at the places where you're holding it, starts to almost crumble a little bit. It starts to give away and come to pieces. It does not touch the space where the writing is, but it does kind of quickly start to fall towards the surface of this desk. And if it is not, if it's, you know, not stopped on its way down, it would land and probably, it doesn't disintegrate, it doesn't like fall to dust, but it is very, very, not brittle, but just kind of, you know, worn. It's definitely been here a while.
Bree will cast Mage Hand to catch it.
Okay. So the parchment floats in midair, suspended by this invisible hand of force. And as you very gingerly kind of hold it there in the space, you're hoping to put it into your vessel?
She can't use the vessel because she used it already and they haven't had a rest. So she was going to try to sneak it into Adrian's bag of holding. But if she knows there's writing on the back of it and she can't read it, then she would look over at Bree, realizing that Bree has seen what she's doing and that Bree is helping her, that Bree held it in the air. And wasting no time, then she would go over and she would get Adrian's attention and say, Adrian, quick, there's writing on it. You've got to see it. And it's just floating in the air right there. Mm-hmm. So Bree's obviously holding it up. But she'd fly back over and point to it.
Adrian would turn around and seeing the paper in midair, wince a little bit at the crumbled edges, but realizing that it seems to be okay, he'll go over and read it. And as he's reading, he will use minor illusions to just active translate.
Okay. You continue with this process, and handling the paper ever so carefully, you're able to see and translate and replicate for everyone in the space. It says, in memory of my love, gone these many years, but not forgotten, to me, if only me, the cost was great. And I hope, in the end, it is worth it.
What cost?
Adrian will think back and turn to Bree and say, in one of the previous rooms, we saw
Sinopus was very deeply studying aspects of necromancy. We also know that his legend indicated that he lived long past that what was natural to people of his race. And seeing that Echo wishes to save the paper, he'll actually reach into his bag of holding and will pull out a full-size mirror and will hold it glass side up. He'll say, "Bree, if you would, if you could set it on the mirror, that might give it something a bit more stable to set on." And then it'll also pull out two sheets of parchment to cover the back to ensure that it doesn't get scraped or scratched any further.
Very good.
Bree will very, very carefully follow it down using Mage Hand.
As you do so, with the paper, the parchment pressed against the mirror in this way, you do manage to kind of get it into a position where you're fairly confident it's not going to be damaged to a significant degree any further. Are you putting it in your bag of holding at this point?
Immediately before that, he's actually going to wrap the mirror, the parchment, and the sheets on top of it in one of his four bed sheets, just to ensure that it doesn't come undone.
Right.
Yeah, just because this is this is one of the Dead Sea Scrolls, essentially. So he wants to make sure if we are planning on taking it, we are going to make sure that it does not gain any harm.
I think at this point, I would probably compare it more to maybe a first edition of one of Erasmus's folios. It's been about 500 years or so since at least since the story of the siren is supposed to have happened at this point. That's all, out of character stuff, but as far as that comparison goes, it hasn't quite been the thousands and thousands of years. This one certainly needs some care, but you've got a pretty good bead on it. And if you all don't mind, I'd actually like to kind of reformat something real quick. Your initial scan of the room, Adrian, with your magic sight, you took it in and you kind of pointed some things out. And as you move to gather them up, I think it would make sense for several key things to really stand out to each of you that are here in the party at this moment. The colorful cloth with the item just there inside. Anelia, you're the one that actually first kind of spotted this thing, and it is brilliant, very lovely in its coloration. It doesn't look worn, doesn't look faded. What's inside, you do not know, but you see it. Echo, you're the one who spots the little pouch situated on the desk there. Adrian, the robes on the peg stand out to you very quickly and very clearly. And the whole time that you're going through this process with the parchment, you're also kind of in the back of your mind like, wizard robes. Looking forward to checking those out. And the slippers. Bree, you are the one who spots them there. As you're examining this big chair, suspecting in your heart of hearts that it might be something like a mimic, you don't find any evidence of that, but you do find these rather plush-looking slippers with a unique kind of pattern upon them situated there. And once, Adrian, you do scan and see these magical items, each and every one, gathering them up and placing them in a safe location for you to later examine. We're going to come back to that in a second. I will say there's one thing that did not register as magical, but Caden, as you have walked into this room and watched all these things begin to unfold, your magical eye is not perhaps as sharp as some of these others, but nonetheless, you do see a couple of papers, some of the books that are stacked up seem to be, there is a very striking statue, a little figurine carved out of what looks like some kind of peculiar, very dark stone of a what is very clearly a minotaur, a pretty big one. The statue itself is still pretty small. To scale, it's like an action figure would be in our world. But you see, scattered around this little statue are a series of sketches done in charcoal. They're quick, but they are also fairly precise. You see some notes, you see some script that you recognize as being not in common, but also, I would say they probably look to you, like you would be able to recognize Dwarvish when you see it. This hand that's being used here, you can't read what it says, but you're able to see an image, a couple of little notes and things surrounding a simple ring shape with a couple of gems embedded in the base of it, and what looks like a small sliver, or portion of it at least, that might even be made of something like bone. It's not colored in very well, but you can see some of the kind of like striation to it. And yeah, actually, with that volunteered information, I would say, Anelia, you, in the course of meandering through here, you're able to communicate to Caden that this set of notes indicates a specially crafted and enchanted septum piercing designed for a minotaur construct that is to be installed in a nearby, and the word is weird in the Dwarvish tongue, but the closest thing you can really approximate is abbey. But it does seem to be that the notes indicate that this enhancement is the kind of thing that will improve the overall like martial proficiency of a construct like this, and ultimately to a suitable champion might be something that would even help out a suitable challenge for a minotaur like that.
So it's, I mean, I read the item earlier, but the way you're describing it, it's being, the plans are for something that enhances a construct, not a living creature.
I would say there's nothing in the text that indicates it would operate any differently than a normal magical item would. But the commission or the, the person who asked for something like this to be made doesn't seem to mind the idea. And in fact, maybe the personal notes that Xenopus includes here say that, you know, should someone manage to destroy said construct, it would make a pretty suitable reward in a case like that. One of the things that you guys have noticed in the reading that you've done of Xenopus's notes, even in the research room, he seems to have a certain level of like genre awareness. Like he seems to recognize that the work that he's doing and the power that he's pursuing, it's all very fascinating and very dramatic. He's made some notes here and there about this will make things, you know, this will be flashy, but there's no sense not enjoying it. In this case, with this particular item, you see a note that says, yeah, basically, you know, suitable champion uses it after vanquishing the beast, so much the better. They're not paying me enough for this anyway. It's mostly an exercise. Serves them right. They can't protect their magical stuff.
So Caden will shuffle the design papers into his bag.
Yeah.
I am presuming the item never got made if it's not pinging on the magical radar.
Well, that's the thing. You can't tell from the writing
here. It's
not
here, at least.
Yes, you do not see it in the space. Not at all.
Caden, and everyone else, did anyone else want to continue searching? Looks at the empty space on the wall and says, I feel like we found what we came looking for. Should we depart? Any disagreements and heading back, collecting what we need? Tomorrow's a big day.
Echo will simply grab that pouch off of the desk and fly up and take her spot on Adrian's shoulder.
All right. I'll take that as a scent.
Guys, I'm really sorry. We might have to call it tonight. It's getting a little chaotic here. I really hate to do it, but... Well, I tell you what, if you can hold off a little longer, I'd hate to eat that much further into it, but a big development here I need to take care of.
If you need to go do what you need to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry, guys. We will pick up next time with you guys kind of wrapping up your time in the space. I'll spend some extra time this week making sure I've got the remainder of the things kind of spelled out, and I'll answer any questions you might have still in the chat going forward. Good night, everybody. I gotta go.
Sleep well.
All right, good night.
Best of luck.